Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Hack the Entrepreneur is supported by CityCards with Android Pay. Listening on your phone? Now you can pay while you listen, using the same device. Just tap and go. Download the Android Pay app on Google Play or visit city.com/AndroidPay to get started. Android Pay is available for eligible Citi consumer credit and debit cards.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a brilliant leader, innovator, constant learner, and an entrepreneur. Since 2010, he's been the founder and chief whaler of Whole Whale, a digital agency that leverages web data and technology to multiply the impact of nonprofits. Prior to Whole Whale, my guest was the CTO of DoSomething.org. Under his leadership, the organization became an innovator in social media, mobile technologies, and social cause. And during that 7 years at DoSomething, he helped to build a community of over 1.5 million young people taking action. Now, let's hack George Weiner. Before we get rolling here, I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Braintree. I know you remember the first dollar you made in business. It's a hard thing to forget. It's one of the greatest parts of being an entrepreneur. And now you want to grow until your business makes your millionth or billionth dollar. But have you found the right payments partner to grow with you? Braintree lets you accept every way to pay, from PayPal to Apple Pay and everything in between. All it takes is one simple integration. And it doesn't matter what currency your customers use, because Braintree lets you accept over 130 of them. To learn more about how you and your company can grow with Braintree, visit braintreepayments.com/hack. That's braintreepayments.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest, George. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Let's jump right into it. George, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
The one thing I'd say is after graduating college, I realized that there was, you know, a lack of continued education. And so a strength I think I've had throughout my career is the ability to switch between the role of both like a student and a teacher. Once I've been able to master a topic, I immediately turn to giving it away, to training other people, to writing about it, and then go back into student mode. So I kind of find myself bouncing between those two worlds and then applying to that, you know, wherever I am in my business trajectory.
Wow. I like that, because there is definitely a lack of continuing education. So do you see teaching as better understanding a topic yourself?
Yeah, I think, you know, teaching is a process of learning. You know, you can't stand up in front of a group of people that are usually, you know, a couple of them more often than not are smarter than you are. You have to know your stuff. So in order to get to that level of knowledge and understanding, like, you go through that process of, let me read all the experts, let me, you know, study the best books, and then come back at it with a new frame so that I can teach that to other people.
Yeah, that makes sense. And with writing, do you write to sort of understand it more? I know I've had this discussion with people, and some people write because it's like you've understood something and now you want to explain it to other people, and other people write to sort of understand it themselves and kind of figure out what you're thinking, whether that's about business or about anything that you're trying to cover, right? But it's sort of an exploration rather than a definitive here's what it is.
Oftentimes I'll sit down, put the, you know, pen to paper, metaphorically speaking, and be like, I wonder where this is going to go. And funny enough, that's actually where the name of my company, Whole Whale, came from. Writing in this moment where I got this idea about how the Inuits used to use every single part of the animal, from like the blubber to the bone, and then fast forward to the, you know, the 1850s in the Massachusetts area, where they would just literally like just take it for, you know, some lamp oil and leave the rest. And I thought of that waste. And then I looked at the nonprofit sector and started writing, you know, we have to use the whole whale here. We have to leverage data and technology to increase our impact. And, you know, there's an article sitting on HuffPost somewhere, you know, a number of years back. And that's where the name of this company came from. So you're absolutely right there.
Wow. And so you'd already started the company, like you knew what you were going to be doing, but do you know what I mean? Like the name hadn't come, or was it sort of the idea of using data so thoroughly, which I've never heard of anyone doing it like you do it and thinking of nonprofits in that way. And it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a coalesced really coming from my experience at DoSomething.org, which became the largest organization for teens and social cause in the U.S. They were able to like just wildly leverage data and technology and SMS. And, you know, it was like we were going, you know, 70 miles an hour. And every time we'd look out the window and I'd look at the nonprofit sector, I'd be like, we're not doing it. We're not leveraging the things we need to do to have the type of impact. And, you know, I said, you know, I want to take a shot at creating a different type of digital agency whose goal is ultimately to close this knowledge gap. So we put out tons of free content and, you know, podcasts and products and things like that in order to close that gap.
Nice. And you spent, how many years did you spend at Do Something?
I spent 7 years.
7 years.
At Do Something, yeah.
Nice. And so what was sort of your process of working as CTO there? I mean, having a huge impact and doing, I'm sure, a lot of fulfilling things professionally and personally, and then wanting to venture out on your own as a founder.
You know, I saw an opportunity in the marketplace and I sort of drove my car off the cliff, frankly. You know, there was something on the other side a little bit, like Dukes of Hazzard. They had a, you know, it wasn't a Bonnie and, you know, like it wasn't Thelma and Louise style, like straight down, but it was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. And it was, you know, it was like a made for TV movie when I walked out of Do Something. I loved that place. Leaving the people that I had, you know, had hired and worked with, they literally slow clapped me out. And I think, I mean, I cried as I got in the elevator. I was like, what am I doing? It was hard.
Did you, previous to that, like, was this your first sort of venture yourself? Or like, was it like through college and stuff that you like had side projects and stuff that were your own sort of businesses before you went CTO? Or is this something that you just had never thought of before?
I think I'm fairly different than a lot of your guests in that I'm a pretty good worker bee. Like I'm gonna go in, be a part of the team. And I hadn't had a lot of sort of like, and then I started this lemonade stand, and then I started this, you know, snow cone factory. I left college looking for an awesome nonprofit to work for. It's, you know, something that I'm going to dedicate my life to making this place a little better than when I got here. And this really was born from the opportunity kind of hitting me over the head, being like, nobody is doing it in this way. And I at least should take a shot at building an agency in this way to address this issue in the marketplace that I see.
I like it. And yeah, the whole lemonade stand through grade school and stuff is definitely a similarity we hear, but not always. And I'm quite intrigued by your determination to want to work in the nonprofit and want to be part of that sort of an agency, like all the way through college. What do you think brought that on with you that you didn't want to just like, I mean, with technology and being like CTO and stuff, I mean, going into investment banking and stuff obviously pays a little more lucratively, but obviously you don't maybe get something else.
Yeah. You know, I've tried to explore a number of different things, and I think we're often shaped by our environment and our role models. And you know, my mom spent, you know, her life working for, you know, the city of New York through the Port Authority, worked in the World Trade Towers, and, you know, continued to work afterward. And, you know, I really saw, like, you can make a living and do quite well working in the nonprofit sector. And you spend every day going in, punching the clock. You might as well do it, in my mind, for something that is truly going to leave a mark rather than, you know, another couple zeros on a bank account. So, you know, that said, you know, I don't intend to retire. I intend to, you know, finish with my boots on, so to speak, while taking, you know, breaks along the way. But I really do believe in the work I do, and I'm blessed to have a team here that thinks the same way.
I like that. So we have your mom to thank for it, for everything that you go on to do. I love it.
Thanks, Mom.
So at the beginning, you said that your one thing is that ability to sort of continue to further your education and to learn. Now, every business expert talks about the 80-20 rule in business, You're supposed to do 20% and get 80% of the results, do what you're good at, and delegate the rest. George, could you please tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
Boy, it is hard to limit it to one, I'll say that. You know, I think you have this too, where it's the finances. I really, really push myself on the financial side. And I understand one basic factor about our finances, and that is if I, follow me here, make more money than I spend every month, I get to stay in business. And that's, you know, that's what I get out of finances. So I do my best on that front. My team gets a little worried when I talk about it that way, but we have an accountant, you know, we have a bookkeeper, and it's this sort of slow evolution of, you know, let's do what, you know, real companies do, and hopefully that'll work.
Yeah, totally. And when you went into this from working as a worker bee, you say, into starting your own company, did you know this immediately? Or was this something that you sort of covered up maybe personally, like, oh, I can do this? And or was it like immediately like, hey, we need somebody in financial because I'm no good at it. I'm no good at this and I'm no good at this, but I am good at this. Or was that sort of evolutionary for you?
I was pretty aware I sucked at it quickly, fortunately, you know, and I was one of my first things when I was going through our invoices and being like, you know, these don't seem to be adding up. We're not making as much money as I thought. And realized that we had, well, I didn't. I pulled in a bookkeeper that I really trusted. And she went through, she's like, George, you haven't been paid in these two things. I was like, oh, boy. All right, you're in. And she's been with me for 5 years now, and she does it on the side. And I love Therese. Thank you, Therese.
Nice. So you, it's not all full-time team around you working and doing things.
Oh, correct. Yeah, you don't need a full-time bookkeeper. So Therese is part-time, accountant part-time, and then we've got currently six full-time, six part-time, a couple interns as well on the whole whale team.
Nice. And do you like do hiring? Do you run sort of the HR part of it and the management? Is that you?
I've tried to delegate as much as possible. You know, we have a young, hungry team, and they love the responsibility. So I, you know, offer a little guidance at first, the training wheels, and then I really try to hand it off. So the last two full-time hires were actually the process. We refined it a lot, and it was executed by two people on our team.
Wow. And does the delegation come from, like, when you were CTO of Do Something, were you delegating at that point? Because I know some organizations, when the CTO does a lot of, like, coding and actual tech themselves, but did you get to get away from that early on?
Yeah, the funny thing about a chief technology officer, you'll find it's like, ask any chief technology officer, what is the role or what do you do? And they're just going to laugh and they're going to be like, what day is it? Is it Tuesday? You know, the other piece is like, you know, it's figuring out what your job should be because it's going to change in 6 months. The half-life of technology is, you know, we're talking about an environment that changes every 6 months. When I started to Do Something, I was, you know, employee number 8. And I didn't start as the CTO. I started as, you know, entry level. And I taught myself programming technology, LAMP Stack, and a number of other digital marketing factors along the way. I almost got fired a couple times, thanks to Nancy's vision, though. Nancy Lublin didn't fire me and instead promoted me up to CTO, where eventually, by the time I left, I had an engineering team of 9 people. So, you know, it really depended on the month what my job was. And at some points, you know, I was the person holding it together with duct tape and glue. And by the end, I had a very, very competent team, and we were, you know, managing a site that had over 1 million a month in terms of users.
Wow. So, okay, so two things. So I'm assuming that that sort of chaotic, sort of undefined environment obviously set you up for running your own company, because it wasn't just do this. But also, I only assumed that you like learned how to develop in college and took like computer science or something. But apparently not. You taught yourself at Do Something how to code and then became CTO?
Correct.
Wow. That's impressive.
It's not the easiest thing to do. Yeah, so I'd spend my nights, you know, combing through books and online resources. You know, the funny thing I think about programming is that these languages that I'm talking about and platforms like Drupal, they weren't really coming into their own until somewhat recently. And if you have, you know, a mind for it and enough interest, you can really guide your own learning curve on this kind of stuff.
Wow. So what did you take in college?
Oh, the ever useful political science and environmental studies double major.
Nice. Nice. That's cool. I took political science as well.
There's nothing you can't do with a poli-sci degree. I said it then and I say it now.
Exactly.
Well done, sir.
Well, I mean, I don't think I could learn to code. I mean, I guess I could if I had the mind for it, but It's fascinating. It's fascinating that you found that and then obviously like found a passion for it as well, because you've pushed it forward into data with. Let's move, if we can, George, onto projects. So projects is a very loose term, but something within Whole Whale that you decide that you and your team decide that you guys should be sort of taking on, or a new sort of direction you should head. I would love to know what your process is as like the chief whaler, but whether it's an internal sort of gut process or whether it's a written process, but when an idea comes to you or when an idea comes to you through your team, how do you decide that an idea is now worth your and your team's time, energy, and resources?
When we're thinking about projects, we take a lot of shots on goal and we have a real methodology behind it. I really enjoyed the book, Ready, Fire, Aim. The one place I think we deviate from that is in there, in that book, they talk about, you know, launching with, you know, as soon as the idea is hot and fresh, you put it out the door and see what happens, let the market decide. I actually let things sit on the shelf, simmer for a bit. And what we do is go through a weighted matrix. So in this weighted matrix, we have the team rate it on a number of different questions for these different projects. So we have this long, you know, spreadsheet of different crazy ideas that we come up with, and then we rate it. You know, we ask, you know, would this help more people learn about Whole Whale? Could it be profitable? Could it scale to help the entire nonprofit sector? Is someone on the team really excited about it? Does it help us, you know, with capacity? A number of other things. And the funny thing is, I realized from the products that succeed versus the products that fail, one of those questions is just, you know, 10x in value the other ones. And it's not maybe the ones that people might be thinking. It's, is someone on the team really excited about it? If I can find an internal champion that really cares about the product and testing it, it tends to work. And conversely, when it's me pushing the product up the hill, it tends to fail, actually.
Wow. that's interesting. Is that, why do you think that it fails when you're pushing it up the hill rather than someone from the team?
Most of my energy goes toward sales at Whole Whale. Frankly, like when you're the chief whatever, your job is sales, and that's what you do. And my focus, for the most part, must be on the company and how we're growing. So I have a divided attention, ultimately, if I'm talking about an internal product. I can give it a bright light focus for only so long, and then it falls off. And, you know, to move an idea into action, it takes that sweat equity and response from the market. So, you know, I think that might be one of the keys. And maybe I'm just unlucky with products, but lucky hiring smart people who are good with products, as we have a couple that are starting to take off. So maybe that's the case.
Yeah. Okay. So that makes sense, because your attention's divided, but somebody working within the product already, that's like their whole day and everything is devoted to that product. So they kind of see it clearer, perhaps. But how, so somebody from your team brings an idea for a new project, and you go through this weighted matrix and then decide whether to build it or not? Or can it pass that matrix because that person is so invested in it and wants to, like, is so excited about it?
Yeah, we kick the tires on it. And it really does take that someone who's excited about it. We also see, is there a way to do an MVP of this thing, that minimum viable product that allows us for very, you know, very low cost to toss it into the market? So, you know, recently we created this thing called Snorkel, which they named, and it's an RFP generator for nonprofits that helps them create requests for proposals that are properly baked and then helps connect vendors on the other side. And we put up together like a lo-fi test, and it's been working. And it's, you know, it's a testament to like, all right, let's see if this works, put it out the door without a huge investment.
I like it. And I'm assuming it sounds like you sort of put into the culture of your company, because you seem to really sort of, you just kind of brushed off, like, if you do something, it's wrong, and but it didn't seem to really affect you. Do you sort of put that into the culture? Like, if somebody brings an idea, obviously, and you go through it, and even if you do an MVP and put time and energy and resources into it, if it doesn't work, it's okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, is that sort of the part of the culture of development?
Yeah, it's one, you know, it's one way not to create the, it's another way not to create the light bulb. So we celebrate those failures. We have the fail fests where, you know, we talk about what worked and didn't work. And we have a product that, you know, every quarter we talk about the fact that we moved it into zombie mode. It's an SMS tool that allows you to connect to Google Analytics and YouTube Analytics. And frankly, it's a vitamin, not a painkiller. And it didn't work. People didn't want to use it because it's, you know, it's too advanced for where the market is on in terms of their data consumption.
Fair enough. All right, George, this has been a lot of fun. I want to wrap up on one final question for you. It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. which seems to be this gap we sometimes live in as entrepreneurs, meaning that no matter what we achieve and accomplish, we never see ourselves personally as successful because we always like project our success into the future. In 3 months when you hit that metric, in 6 months when you stand on that stage, that's when you're going to see yourself as successful, yet we both know that right before you get there, you're going to make bigger, loftier goals into the future. You've done a lot of things since college. You've accomplished a lot. I'm sure there have been a lot of highs, lows, wins, and losses. But George, I would love it right now if you could stop and look behind you and tell me how you feel about your whole career up until today.
Yeah, this is a wonderful question because it forces both myself and the people listening to sort of take that moment. And I, as often as possible, think about practicing gratitude. I'm so grateful that the, talented people that I come to work with choose to work with me at Whole Whale. And also, this is sort of a meta moment because this right now was one of my goals. I wrote it down on a piece of paper when I started listening early on to when you started this podcast. And I was like, you know what? When I get big enough, I'm going to try to get on that show. And, I'm going to be listening to this later and being like, there it was, very meta. Look, it is really about gratitude for me and trying to appreciate those moments as I go along, because I'm aware that, you're struggling so hard and it's every single day something, that you don't expect is really going to rustle something. And so you might as well enjoy the process and not just, arriving at the destination.
I love it. I love it. All right, George, we've got to talk about your business in passing. I know we have listeners that work within the nonprofit sector, so I'd love it if you could tell them more about Whole Whale right now.
Sure. Whole Whale, a digital agency that works with data and technology to increase your impact. Frankly, what it means is if you have a website and you need to understand what the heck's going on with your analytics, we're not only going to set that up, but we're also going to train you. We have a podcast, wholewhale.com/podcast, that talks about stories of data and tech in the nonprofit world. And we also have a lot of e-learning resources to help you with, for instance, Google AdWords grants.
I love it. It's not like you want to help nonprofits become profitable, but it's like just really analyzing the data to make, I guess, more efficiencies within your promotions and things and web.
Yeah. Look, I think, it's a misnomer that nonprofits don't care about profit. Look, if you don't make money, you're going to go out of business. If you don't understand what your donors are doing and where they came from on the website, you're not going to do very well. If you're not serving your stakeholders and you're trying to create awareness around a certain topic, such as violence against women, you're not going to succeed as well if you don't understand the data in your backyard and then leverage it.
I love it. I love it. Excellent. So wholewhale.com/podcast, Ready, Fire, Aim the book, as well as dosomething.org, which we've mentioned many times today. I will link to all those in the show notes for you. George, are you on any social media where people can find you?
Yeah, you can hang out with us on the Twitters at Whole Whale.
Excellent. 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 Very cool. I will link to all that in the show notes when you're done walking, working, whatever it is you're doing right now. You can track it down at hacktheentrepreneur.com. George, once again, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. And please keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thanks for having me on.
George, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for sharing and being so open. I really, truly do appreciate it. And you out there listening, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did, as much as I enjoyed taking part in it. And I hope you got as much out of it as I did. And if you want, reach out to George on social media, on Twitter, or on LinkedIn. Tell him you heard him on the show. Follow up with any questions you might have, or just tell him he's doing awesome work. So we reached the point in the show where we have to go back into the conversation. And we have to look for that one thing that George said. So I had 7 things listed to go back to. So I went back to them, and then I went back, and then I went back again. And then it was there, right in front of me, that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
The funny thing is, I realized from the products that succeed versus the products that fail, one of those questions is just, 10x in value the other ones. And it's not maybe the ones that people might be thinking. It's, is someone on the team really excited about it? If I can find an internal champion that really cares about the product and testing it, it tends to work. And conversely, when it's me pushing the product up the hill, it tends to fail, actually.
And that's the hack. George, George, George. I love this. I love this. And this, I like how right before this, you have this quite elaborate, like weighted matrix on a number of different variables and inputs for determining if an idea is worth you and your team putting their time, energy, and resources into it. But then it comes to what turns out to be the most important is if somebody on the team is really, really, really into the idea and passionate about it. Because I think, as we know, that whether it's us, I think, or whether it's someone on our team, without that passion and that level of excitement and motivation, you won't push through and you won't do what it takes to make it work, right? There's most ideas could be made to work, I believe, if you approach them with the right sort of tenacity, the right amount of energy, right? It's the entrepreneurs that are willing to do what it takes rather than, and willing to, I think, quit when you're done rather than quit when you're tired, or quit when some little variable tells you no. So I love that you have a weighted matrix, but you still, there's this sort of, this, it's not that scientific. Like, as much as we want to, and as much as we should have these criteria and these matrices to determine what we should work on, there's still this sort of amorphous part, which is passion. And somebody really, really wanting to drive this and really, really wanting to push this and make this work. Because that is so much what it takes. So if you are working on building out your own sort of matrix of what should determine your ideas, profitability, how it will help people, how it will fit into your existing business, all these things, and you should be slowly developing something like this, don't ignore the fact of passion and your absolute just willingness to make this work and just your want to make this work. This is so important. Having that passion is what will push you when the doors close or the doors don't open in front of you. You will kick those doors down and make sure that they work. George, thank you. All right. That was a lot of fun. So we're wrapping up summer. It's August already. Holy smokes. And my family is just getting ready to pack up and move to Toronto. Wonder how many of you are in Toronto or around Toronto. I think in the fall sometime of this year, so 2016, for all those listening later, but I think we should try and do some sort of meetup, whether it's at a coffee shop or a restaurant or something. I think we should. I think it'd be fun. So I'll talk about it maybe in November or so once I get settled. But yeah, I think we should do something like that. I think it would be really good. So you could drop me an email if you want, john@hacktheentrepreneur, or track me down on Twitter or something. But yeah, let me know if you're in the area or if you could make your way to that area. I think it could be a lot of fun. I think we could probably be good for lots of us to connect with each other and with me. I think we should make it work. All right. So thank you so much for joining me. As always, I appreciate it so much. I hope you are enjoying and enjoy the rest of your summer. And until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.